This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with me today. Nice to have you back, Grant. You were out for a day or two battling a malaise, and you have arisen victorious.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what I was so sad about.
Yeah, it's well, you know, sometimes too, this time of year when the temperature shifts and everything, it can kind of mess with your health a little bit. So that's always something to keep in mind, I guess. But good to have you back. Lot to talk about in today's program. I might mention, by the way, that if you'd like to follow us online on Twitter, you can do that at KPCGFM. And any comments you have, you can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. We have some nice comments from a few listeners, some good story ideas that we don't have time to get to today, but we're going to incorporate those later. So send in your ideas. We always enjoy getting those. And, you know, pottery, anything you'd like to send our way. You can't email pottery.
We'll at least talk about it off the air, well, so there's always that.
Yeah, that's right. There's so much information that's out there, and a lot of times listeners find some really interesting stories to send along. So we appreciate those. Lots to talk about today, including some headlines, also what's going on at thetrumpet.com, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Trumpet Hour program, and we're going to look at this book, The King of the South. A lot going on over there in the Middle East, and so we're going to take a look at that booklet today. Here's an interesting story that it highlights a few things, and on the surface it might seem kind of, I don't know, maybe a little bit on the frivolous side, but I do think it is interesting. Here's the headline. LiAngelo Ball and UCLA teammates could face 3 to 10 years in prison if convicted of shoplifting. Don't know if you heard about this. Yeah, Grant did. The Ball family has been pretty famous / infamous lately. Three brothers. I can't think of all their names. There's Lonzo in the NBA, LiAngelo, and then
LaMelo.
LaMelo,
I think so. Yeah.
So they got some interesting names, but
and the father's name is LeVar.
LeVar.
So they all have L's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're famous for basketball. The dad's pretty outspoken. He has these three sons. The one is in the NBA now. Lonzo playing for the Lakers. His son LiAngelo is a freshman at UCLA, and then his youngest is in high school still. So they're pretty well known in the basketball world. Kind of a lightning rod for comments and conversation. Well, UCLA, a very famous, prestigious American college, goes over to China. They're going to play their first game of the year against another school there from the U.S. or from the U.S. So they go and they get caught shoplifting. Now, you get caught shoplifting in China. It's not like the U.S. where it's like, well, you know, you shouldn't have done it. Slap on the wrist. It's serious in China. It says if standard practices are applied, the three UCLA basketball players, including LiAngelo Ball, arrested Tuesday in mainland China, under suspicion of shoplifting, face between 3 to 10 years in prison. If convicted, according to Chinese lawyers who briefed Yahoo Sports on the applicable laws, the sentencing guidelines could shift depending on the amount that the Chinese could prove was allegedly stolen. Authorities believe the players shoplifted from a Louis Vuitton store. I believe that's how you say it. Louis V.
You're right.
That's expensive. I've never been in one. That's one of those stores where you walk by it and it has like four purses there and eight security guards. So, you know, I'm not shopping in that store.
I don't really know why they would try to steal from there when there's plenty of locations back home where if you did get caught, you wouldn't get put away for 10 years. I mean, I thought they were going to be trying to steal an ancient Chinese relic or something over there, something that's actually unique to that region.
Foolish on many levels and just flat out wrong, of course. And in the case of this LiAngelo Ball, they've got some money. They're okay. They don't need to be stealing stuff. But nevertheless, you shouldn't steal anyway, of course. So they stole, apparently, from this Louis V store near the UCLA team hotel outside Shanghai. The Bruins are in China to play Georgia Tech on Saturday in the season opener. The players were arrested Tuesday after local law enforcement came to the team hotel and questioned both UCLA and Georgia Tech players. So anyway, when you're in China, though, it's a lot worse than it would be here in the United States. It's not uncommon for a defendant to wait 30 to 37 days in jail before they decide whether or not they're even going to try the case. That's a month. And they'll decide. They're not in a hurry. Prosecutors enjoy a 99.2% conviction rate in China.
Well, okay then. They're in trouble.
They're in trouble. Now, they're somewhat prestigious, especially this ball kid. They've got some money. You know, maybe they'll work out some deal. I don't know. But it's such a bad look on so many levels. Here you have these American basketball players coming to China to try to expand, I'm sure, the global reach of basketball and all this. They're representing one of the prestigious colleges here in America. And they get caught shoplifting. Now, and it's not like they sent them to China on, you know, rations, and they have nothing to eat. Today they were, I think it was today, they were supposed to go to, like, Disney World. That's a whole promotional tour over there. And they're stealing from a store next to the team hotel. Because somebody's got to just bang these guys' heads together. What a bad look for America, for UCLA. Really a shame in the world's eyes.
Yeah, that really is incomprehensible why they would do that. I was initially very suspicious, though, to hear that they had to they didn't initially catch anyone at the store, and so they went back and they talked to both teams. They didn't even know which team had the players who stole something. I don't know if maybe they stood out because they were twice as tall as all the Chinese people, and then they knew that there were a couple basketball teams staying nearby, but I didn't know if maybe that might have even been a sham as well, because you can't really justify why they would try to do something like that on such an awesome trip.
Yeah, now it could be. Now maybe it'll turn out they didn't do it, and let's hope that's the case. So that is a good point to bring out, because what a shame that would be. Now, on the flip side, fame is fame, right? And the Ball family has a reality show. I don't know what it's called. Is it? I want to say it's called Ball in the Family, but that can't be right.
I think you're right.
Is that what it's called?
It's okay. Something like that.
A takeoff on a show from years ago. Anyway, I've never seen it, but I know that it's out there. They're kind of trying to do like the reality Kardashian thing. Well, this is a great storyline. It's interesting for their show, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's just a shame anytime representatives from America go somewhere and do something really foolish, or even just get accused of it. Maybe they'll be innocent. I don't know. I hope they are. But it just makes us look really bad. I mean, America's a rich nation. These guys are going to UCLA. That's an expensive school, and they're still stealing stuff next to the team hotel or potentially doing that. You know, it's just one of those things where you can just see the you can just see the other nations just shaking their head. It just makes us look horrible.
Very true, and I always even cringe sometimes when following the Olympics closely, because it does seem like American athletes get in quite a lot of trouble, whether it's at the Olympic Village or with the police officers. I think there was one of the Olympic swimmers got in trouble with that. One of the basketball players got in trouble by posting something really inappropriate on social media, and so it's just like it is pretty embarrassing some of the things that our representatives do in other nations.
And some of the commenters on the story, I thought, brought out a potentially pretty good point, and that is, in the United States, if you are a high-profile athlete and you got into something like this, there'd be a lot of layers to the story. Like, was it a racial thing? Was it this? Was it that? They said China doesn't care.
Right.
They're not playing into your social justice. If you got caught stealing, here's the penalty, and it could be up to 3 to 10 years in jail. You know, we live in kind of a fairy tale land here in the U.S. where I don't think people often realize how much trouble you can get in for something. They're not big on second chances in nations like that.
No.
You break the law, you go away. And it's just different than the way we think here in the U.S.
Yeah, and actually, in those cases, there might actually be legitimate discrimination if they knew that. Like in China, for example, if they knew that the person was American, they might be more prejudiced that way. But here we make up different ways of discrimination that in a lot of cases are proven not to be true. But it's just part of the whole trend of not taking responsibility for one's own actions. There is real discrimination in other countries, and there are real penalties in other countries. We try to act like here is the most cruel of all, when that's not even close to the truth at all.
Yeah, we are. Don't have the same sort of harsh penalties oftentimes. I don't even know if they're harsh. I mean, but they're you wouldn't think of shoplifting as a 3 to 10 year prison term. here in the U.S.
No.
It's a penalty, obviously, but 3 to 10 years in prison, that's pretty serious. So we'll see what happens with that. But again, it's a just it's not a good look for the U.S. on the on the world stage. There is kind of the I think there's a thought out there of like the big, loud, brash American, you know. This plays right into that. Mm-hmm. And while the president's on his Asian trip, too, that doesn't help him at all. Because now this is in the news. They're in Asia, too, and they're stealing stuff out of the store.
Yeah, that is a good point. And that kind of makes me even more suspicious in a way. I mean, I'm sure there's a good chance they did do it. But I'm also wondering, as was the case with Otto Warmbier over in North Korea, he didn't actually do anything. He was framed for stealing in that case. And then, of course, he was sent home in a coma and eventually died. China obviously isn't as extreme as North Korea, but their hatred for America is similar, if not as outspoken. It's a similar type of hatred. And especially if they actually did it, you know that the punishment's going to be as extreme as possible because China is no friend of America. They're not looking to do Americans any favors in cases like this.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting story.
Which should make people be even more careful when they're over there and they know that they're going to get punished like 30 times more than if they were actually back home.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, really, going over as part of a basketball team, playing a game from a prestigious university, you are sort of an unofficial ambassador for the United States of America. And so going over there in that role and being somebody that's China is a huge it's a huge basketball country. They love basketball. They love American basketball. Every summer the big Nike stars go over there and they have their functions because they sell a lot of shoes over there.
Right.
And they play and people love it. And the Ball family is very famous. And so this guy goes over there, they're all excited to see him. He gets caught stealing at a store potentially. Ooh. Not a good situation at all.
Yeah, that's like one of the hazards of youth as well, especially when young guys are around each other and they're probably daring each other to do something stupid and they don't really take into account the fact that of all times to avoid doing something stupid, it would be when you're on an international trip to a place like China. Obviously because you are an unofficial ambassador, but also because you're in a pretty harsh nation compared to the U.S. Maybe they didn't realize that because they've been taught that America is the most harsh, unfair nation, but they're learning the reality of that right now, that there are a lot of nations out there that are much less pleasant to live in.
You remember, well, this was years back. This is, I think, when I was younger, so probably it was before your day even, but there was a guy, I can't remember his name, I just thought of this, but he got caught doing something, I think it was in China, he was an American, he was somewhere over there in Asia, and stealing, whatever, and he got caned for it.
Wow.
Like, that's the penalty. They took I think it's a bamboo rod, and they just smack you with it, and I think he got, I forget if it was 50 times or something, but like, and I remember there was this outcry, like, please, no, and they're like, that's the penalty, you're going to get caned. And I think he did.
Wow.
So that's, you know, we're not used to that. Here there'd be protests and riots, well, I don't know about riots, but there'd be protests and, you know, let them go and this is cruel. And you do something like that in a foreign country, you know, and some of the commenters pointed out too, never, never, never go to jail in a foreign country. It's not a, there's a whole reality show based on that. I think it's called Locked Up Abroad, if you've ever
really?
Seen it.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to check that out.
You do not want to go to prison in a foreign country. Or in the U.S., of course. But so anyway, it's an interesting story. It doesn't make the U.S. look good, that's for sure.
I actually have a hard time imagining Chinese people whining about criminal justice reform. Because it just seems like they get thrown in prison just for complaining about it. And yet here we talk about it all the time, where if enough people are committing a crime, you need to change the law so that whatever they're doing is no longer a crime. With the drug war and all these other things, it's just like we continually lower the bar, where in other places it's completely inflexible. And in a way, I actually appreciate that. If I knew I was going to possibly go to prison for 10 years for stealing, then there's like even more of a chance I would steal. And I've never stolen as it is, but I would think that'd be a pretty strong deterrent.
Oh, for sure it would be, especially if you knew there was no wiggling out of it. That would definitely stop people from doing things like that. So interesting story there. Here's another story that's going to be very near and dear to your heart, Grant, because you've done this. Ditching smartphones. Oh, dumb yeah. Phones with basic functions are appealing to some. There's this new market out there now. It says, gone are the days when phones were used simply to talk or text, But what if we could go back to just that? Disconnect for a while, stress-free, says Patrice White. There's a some new phones that are coming out, of course, of the smartphone variety, Apple and Android. They're like $1,000 phones, so they're getting more and more expensive. More features than ever. But they're saying maybe the dumb phones are going to be the next big seller. There's a couple of examples. There's one that's $150. It's called the Light Phone. It only makes and takes calls.
Wow.
That's the only thing it does. However, here's the kind of the strange thing about it and why I think it really is a dumb phone, is that it connects to your smartphone. So like if you want to go out but not have your smartphone with you, you buy another phone that just takes calls. So
I'm
like,
see.
Well, why would you ever do that? Why would you buy another phone to connect with your other phone? Like that, to me, that truly is a dumb phone.
Yeah, maybe that's if it's like a really extreme case of people who never actually enjoy the moment because they're always trying to post whatever they're doing to social media, or they find themselves checking their phone in the middle of a conversation with a real life human being. I could see where if they wanted to fix that but still saw some actual practical uses for their smartphone at other times outside of social settings, maybe they would do something like that. But for me, having a dumb phone is pretty nice because it's almost like I have a smartphone, because anytime like some huge breaking news happens, there's always several people who text it to me anyway, like whether it's sports or on the world scene or whatever else. It's almost like I'm getting the notifications like I would on a smartphone anyway.
So you're tapping into the world as your smartphone.
I have real-life human sources, just like a reporter would.
There you go. Get a bunch of friends with smartphones and then just tell them to tell
They're
you
always
stuff.
Telling me. It's so funny.
Yeah. There's another one. This one might be a little more practical. It's $295. It's the Punked phone. I don't know how I feel about buying a phone that's called the Punked phone. Did I get punked? Who got punked? Who's getting punked?
That show is hilarious.
P-U-N-K-T, the Punked phone. It lets you talk, text, set alarms, and use a calendar, and that's it. Now, the things I want is obviously being able to talk. I want the text. I want email. And I probably want internet. So that to me is, and I guess that's the basic of any smartphone. And there's like a trillion apps you can put on it, but I do like... If nothing else, I at least need to be able to talk and text, I think. So I would want those features.
What about talk, text, alarm, calendar, and emails, but no internet? I bet a lot of people would actually like that because the internet is obviously the big time waster. And if you didn't have a chance to even download any other apps that use the internet, you just had access to your emails. That seems like a pretty efficient way to, you know, have your business, take care of your business, but not be wasting time on other things.
Yeah, I kind of relate to some of the people in this story where they were tracking all kinds of things on their phone and they just got sick of it. I did that. I had a health app and I was like, well, this is neat. Like it tracks how far I walk and it tracks how much I sleep. I don't know how it did that, but that's what I claim to do. It tracked my exercise. And then at one point I thought, why am I doing this? I know if I slept well or not. I don't need the phone to tell me. I know. I can feel it.
Yeah.
Like, I know if I had exercise today. And I'm not saying it's bad to track those things, but I just found myself spending all my time tracking things that I'm aware of. I'm like, I'm aware. I know what I'm doing. I don't need the phone to tell me. So I got rid of that one because I was tired of it. And plus, it would always send me like sort of insulting messages like, well, you should be more active today. I'm like, I know, but I have had a very busy day. You know, I'm like, I'm having a conversation with my phone and it's telling me things. And then I had it to where I would go on like a jog and it would keep track of all that. And it would talk to me while I was running. It's like, it would say, you probably need to speed up, or it'd say, too fast, slow down. I'm like, you don't tell me. So it was too much for me, and I thought I'm going to cut away from it. Other people feel the same, some to the point where they're saying, just give me the basic phone. I'm done with the smart one.
Yeah, it is incredible how easy it is to waste time or to get too involved in the phone, when in a lot of situations it might just be better to even write things down. Like if you had different appointments, why not have a little book, put things down on paper, write thoughts down on paper instead of always having everything being tied to a device. It is almost like the device becomes an extension of your body after a while. It's like an extension of your hand, or it's always stuck to your leg in your pocket when there are a lot of ways to be free of something like that.
And it's getting very expensive too.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's just another thing. You look at your monthly bill, especially if you're spending $1,000 on a phone every couple of years, you know, it does add up. And of course now they're getting people into the pay as you go. So you're always making it, you're basically making like a, well, you're making a phone payment, but it's, you know, it's like you bought a car or something.
Yeah.
Paying $50 a month for your phone. And it adds up, you know, when you start adding up all those bills. And then the data, you know, you have to buy a certain data package. Most people probably don't exceed it. I shouldn't say that. I don't, but you have to buy enough. So it gets pretty pricey after a while.
Yeah, and I've noticed that as well. Unless you're getting like buying one of those prepaid phones or something, it's almost like you're forced to get at least 1 gigabyte of data. And obviously that makes your bill go up a lot higher. I just have the 1 gigabyte shared with my wife because she actually does have a smartphone and I don't. And so pretty much she has the entire gig to herself. But it's just kind of irritating that you can't fully choose what you want and what you don't want. I mean, I even told you that one time about how I tried to even buy my latest phone with cash, and they were trying to make me pay for it month by month when I had all the money right there to give to them at once.
Yeah. It's funny how if you bring money to certain things, people are kind of not sure what to do with it. You know, and I laugh sort of, I talk to my wife about it sometimes. We're at the store, and I worked, my first job as a teenager, like outside of, you know, working for a neighbor or something, was TJ Maxx. They opened one in our town, and so I did, you know, all the basic stuff, register, service desk, all that. And most people paid with cash. We're talking mid-late 90s, right? So everybody paid with cash or check. Credit card was kind of weird. If they pulled out a credit card, we had to bring out a machine, like a special machine, and make copies and sometimes call a bank. I literally call like an 800 number, like, wow. And they have to verify it. And but now you hardly ever see cash. It's always credit now, or it's a phone. They've got the pay on their phone. So just the way we pay for things has completely changed, where you just don't see cash anymore.
Yeah, that is really strange too. I all these different ways to like swipe your phone in front of a card reader or something at a cash register. It's just kind of, it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable, because what if it just decides one day not to work? Obviously, we're making everything digital now. Everything is going electronic, but it's pretty easy for those things to break down and shut off. And so it is pretty nice if you have an opportunity to use cash sometimes, or at least have some in your wallet in case the other things fail.
So the phones and the payment methods and all of that, maybe going back in some ways to a more nostalgic time of not having so much. The last quote from this little article here, it says, "We've hit a point where we can pretty much do everything with these phones, and I think some people are finding themselves saying, what do I need all that for? It's kind of overkill. My idea, and if there's some entrepreneur out there listening that knows how to do things, it would be so great, and I think so popular, if you could buy your phone, your device, and your plan a la carte. Mm. I want that, I want that, I want that, I want that. And that's what I want to pay for, including the device. You know, I want those three things. Give that to me." And I imagine it would be pretty much, those would all be pretty much, there'd be several options that people would want. So you could just say, okay, here's this device, here's that device. I would love that. To see exactly what it costs, and then buy it a la carte instead of having to buy these whole big packages. I don't want half of it.
That seems like it's almost starting to become a reality with online streaming services. People get tired of having to buy all of the TV channels, and now they're letting you sometimes choose here and there. But you have to watch it online, I think. That's the difference. But that would be really nice if you could do that with a phone. Like even with mine, there is an option to use the internet, but it's really slow. Obviously, my screen is tiny. It wouldn't play any videos anyway, so I've never once tried it. But still, the internet is built in. The games are built in. And those are things that I would rather not even have on it. Like literally just talking and texting and nothing else at all. And so if you had a chance to choose those things and not choose the rest of it, probably the phone would be less expensive as well.
Yeah. One of the things they're pushing with some of these phones is that the battery life is a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have all these apps draining it.
It's
and
like
so
5 days
forth.
Or something.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smartphones, you can't go much more than a, well, I don't
pretty
know,
much
about,
a day.
About a day, 24 yeah. hours, yeah. And then if you've got an app that's misbehaving, all of a sudden you're phone's dead.
Right.
Like mine was yesterday. I'm like, what?
Like some, after 5 or 6 hours, it's ridiculous sometimes.
Some app is doing something in the background.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing? Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story, Puerto Rico struggles through America's longest blackout. Speaking of not having any technology available. 7 weeks after Hurricane Maria made landfall, the island is still in the dark. We talked a little bit about that a while ago, about how they're, you know, it's not over for them in Puerto Rico. They're still struggling, and it's going to take a long time to get back and up and going. If they ever do, I guess people assume they would, but it's been 7 weeks, and they still don't have the utilities and so forth that they need. And the people have moved on for the most part, right? News cycles, all that's moved on, but they're still sitting there.
Yeah, they are connected to the U.S. in a way, but I don't think their infrastructure is nearly up to what it is in a place like Houston or South Florida, and so it is a lot harder to rebuild. I've seen the media attributing that to the president's racism because some of those people happen to be a little bit more tan than white, and it's just unbelievable. It's so simple, the fact that they just do not have the technology or the infrastructure in place in a lot of cases. It's hard to rebuild it. Especially as bad as they got hit as well. Obviously there's other reasons besides somebody's racism there, and it is sad to see what's happening there. The U.S. government, of course, is trying to do all it can, but when you just had Hurricane Harvey hit Texas, when you just had Hurricane Irma hit Florida, and the government is paying out hundreds of billions of dollars to those two, and then a third one is down there in Puerto Rico, it's pretty difficult to pay all those things at once.
Yeah, that's right. That's another great point, that there have been so many disasters. How are you going to cover everything and get it all solved? And with Puerto Rico, from what I understand, I mean, it's not a matter of just sending down, you know, 10 extra workers to get things sorted. You've got to basically rework an entire island there. So very difficult situation. Check that out at thetrumpet.com. Related to that, why natural disasters? Why did they happen in the first place? Read that there at the Trumpet. Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host Stephen Fleury, talking about the cause of the evil in the world today, getting back to the root of a lot of the problems that we see, and there are just so many of them now. Also, the Trumpet Hour program talks about a few things, including Lebanon and Saudi Arabia, what's going on over there, and a focus on toxic masculinity. Your host Joel Hilliker brings out, did you know masculinity actually could solve these some of these problems in terms of sexual harassment and stuff? It's not masculinity that's the problem. It's the lack of the right kind of masculinity, and he talks a lot about that.
Oh, that's a wonderful topic to get into, especially the way that we view masculinity today, the way that society scorns it. I even noticed just watching TV a lot of the time, whenever you have certain artists or athletes or anyone featured on a show, it's almost like they're picking the most effeminate ones possible. Like, they're always giving the most spotlight to these guys who are just really wimpy, and it's almost like they're purposely doing that because they're saying, well, this is what a man should be like. You know, they should have the floppy hair and the skinny jeans, and they should be scrawny. And these are the ones, you know, like more of a high-pitched voice and things like that. And it's like, well, why are you purposely never having like anyone else besides that type of male on TV? And so you can definitely tell there's a push to try to emasculate real men and to put different role models out there, so maybe that men will try to behave differently.
Right. They do show a lot of extremes where they'll try to highlight someone that is more in the effeminate side. And then if you see someone that would be considered more of your traditional masculine type of individual, they're usually highlighting them if they've done something wrong.
Yeah.
And then blaming it back on that. You know, it's interesting too. I was just thinking about that term, toxic masculinity. It's like a lot of terms that are thrown out there, they're lies, but the term sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And people think of it, and it stays in people's heads. What about flipping the coin? Could you say there's toxic femininity? Would that be a popular thing to throw out there? Because the reality is, there's a right way to be masculine and feminine, and there's a wrong way. It can be toxic on either side of it if it's not according to God's law. But obviously, the attack is very specifically on biblical manhood. That's what they're going after. And trying to find people that have, you know, just completely broken God's law in every which way and then say, well, that's masculinity. No, that's breaking God's law. I don't care if you're masculine when you do it or if you're feminine when you do it.
Yeah.
Breaking the law is breaking the law. But the solution to these problems is a proper masculinity and then the proper femininity as well.
Yeah, and it's not like I have a problem with anybody, but you can easily tell what the push is. You can tell that real men are being undermined. I mean, even in a lot of cases, unfairly silenced. Like I think, for example, the situation with Bill O'Reilly at Fox News, when a lot of people came forward and they smeared him for sexual harassment, and there's never been a shred of evidence at all. He has vehemently denied it many times, and I tend to believe what he's saying, but you know, someone like him who actually takes a stand for things and doesn't let people spew political correct nonsense on his show, well, okay, they're gonna silence someone like that, and they're going to push other people who maybe they just are too weak to take a stand on anything, and so they're not a threat.
Yeah, that's the flavor of the month, isn't it? Attacking all kinds of people with allegations, and in some cases they're true, in some cases they may not be. I don't know, but
yeah, we're not there, obviously.
Yeah.
But it does get a little old whenever there's just accusations left and right, and it's always like 40 people coming out at the same exact time after 30 years. I mean, even with Harvey Weinstein, if people would have spoken sooner, a lot of horrible things could have been prevented as well. And so you wish that people would actually be taking a stand against evil more quickly and being more truthful as well, because I think some other cases are just smear campaigns.
Yeah, even in the Weinstein case, which is a really bad deal in a lot of ways, some of the people, some of the victims, I guess, they're what they themselves say is sort of baffling.
Yeah,
because they'll talk about, well, the first time it happened, and the second time, and the third time. Well, how many times before did you say something? Or
yeah,
or how, you know, you knew that those things were going on. I was even thinking today about, there's been plenty of individuals over the years, politicians and others, who publicly were involved in things like that. People knew it for years.
Yeah.
The media knew. Everybody knew, and they just kept, well, you know, eh. Well, if it's wrong, it's wrong. It's not, you can't pick and choose, and that's the thing that we see is sort of the moral relevancy, like, well, we think this is wrong in this instance, but in this other instance, we don't care. Well, the law is the law. So if it's wrong, it's wrong, but you know, it just seems like they're picking and choosing who to go after for breaking some laws. But honestly, a lot of people are breaking some laws.
Yeah.
You know, quite frankly, people that are, say, engrossed in the Hollywood culture, you know, is it right to go watch all those movies that they make full of all the filth? It's easy to watch those and then point the finger at the people that made them. But what about watching them? I mean, there's a lot to consider there.
Yeah. And another thing, obviously, what we're really forgetting is the true definition of masculinity and the true definition of femininity, because people could point at someone like Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey or anyone else, anyone who has been accused of these horrible things, and say, well, these are just, you know, these are just macho men, and they just force their will on everybody. Okay, well, is that what the definition of masculinity is, or is masculinity about protecting and having compassion on the weak and making sure that no one commits injustice against them? You're not masculine if you just use your physical strength to overpower someone weaker than you. And so people are conflating physical strength to be used in hard work, in challenging yourself in a positive way, with physically abusing someone else. You can have physical strength, but also have compassion on people. And that's what true masculinity is, a mix of steel and velvet. It's not all just being a brute beast and pushing that on other people.
Yeah, and if you look at what God says to even, say, kings, he tells them, you can look in Jeremiah, he's talking to the king of Judah, and he says, if you uphold the law, if you protect the weak, if you do all these things, then I'll bless you, and if you don't, then I'll take you from power.
Mm-hmm.
Those are we're talking about the kings. And that's what God says to the kings. If you want to be a king or if you want to be a leader of any kind, you don't harm other people.
Yeah.
That's the law. But it doesn't mean that you're weak and you're, you know, effeminate and all these things. It means you use your masculinity in the right way. And you can see that all throughout the Bible. But that's one thing you don't hear about in these big controversies and scandals. You don't hear anybody going back to the Bible except for, you know, here at the Trumpet.
Right. And masculinity and femininity are virtues. And so really there's no fault in those things. You can't say that it's, you know, too much of a good thing or whatever other phrase you might want to use. It's all good. Masculinity is all good. True femininity is all good. Whenever people are not truly masculine or feminine, that's when the problems come into play. And God defines exactly what those two things are. If you deviate from those definitions in your life, then you have these big stories like this. Or you have the feminist movement, which is not feminine whatsoever, but it has co-opted that term into its movement. A feminine woman does not yell and scream and demand things like that. So you just see whenever people defy those definitions, things go wrong.
It's really an interesting topic, and it's just discussed really well in the Trumpet Hour program today. So make sure you stop and check that out. Really, really good program. Today is November the 8th, and there's a historical note that's interesting and ties into what we want to talk about for the rest of today's program. 1990 on this day, U.S. President George H.W. Bush ordered more troop deployments into the Persian Gulf, adding about 150,000 soldiers to the multinational force fighting against Iraq. Many will remember that happening. So that happened on this day in 1990. You fast forward now, what are we, 27 years down the road? U.S. is leaving the Middle East in a lot of ways, and Iran coming in to fill the power vacuum as the king of the South. And that's something that has been the Bible's talked about, of course, prophesied would happen. And Trumpet editor-in-chief Joel Fleury has been talking about that for many, many years, over 20 years, about Iran being the king of the South. Back in 1990, it didn't look like that. No one was thinking of Iran that way. But today, many people are seeing Iran that way. They truly are the king of the South today.
Yeah, and there has been a lot of criticism of the way America has handled things in the Middle East, rightly so. But one thing that has really changed in the discussion of it is our opinion of the Iraq War. We think now that it was, of course, a mistake to get involved in that, when really the only mistake that we're making is not seeing it through to the proper conclusion. Is it right to depose someone like Saddam Hussein? Yes, because he's horribly mutilating and killing his own people. But to then withdraw, or to let the Iraqi leaders then say, well, we actually prefer Iran to be here, and U.S., you can now go home. Well, of course, that is a failure. And so we have handled these things the wrong way. We have actually, in a lot of ways, created the vacuum that Iran can now easily step into. That's where we went wrong. Getting into certain wars is not always the problem. It's the fact that we didn't achieve our objective in those wars or in those other missions.
Yeah, in effect, what we did is we knocked out any counterbalance to Iran with Saddam Hussein, and so now they've come in. Now, you know, it took a few years. It didn't happen in one day. But it's the trend, and that's what we've seen for over 20 years now, and it's really coming to fruition with Iran, as you said, just saying quite frankly, and Iraq saying quite frankly, go home, U.S. Iran's our future, and there's a really good Key of David program coming up about that this weekend that you need to see. This booklet is free at thetrumpet.com, The King of the South. This first chapter's got a lot of really great information in it, and a lot of it you need to sit down and really read through, and we don't have the time to get into it. We're talking about the prophecies in Daniel 11 about a king of the South pushing at the king of the North, and it gets into who those powers are and some of the history about them over the years, what those powers have done, and then it comes to today and where we are today. And so a lot of that you just have to really sit down and read and get into some of that studying, and it gives you the great background. But then we get to more modern days, and we have here Iran being the king of the South, and really a pivotal moment was September 11th, 2001. Terrorist attacks on America, the U.S., targeted Afghanistan, of course, and then Iraq after those, as we recall. And says both of these campaigns absorbed an enormous amount of America's resources in its war on terror. But where did all of this terrorism begin? Iraq and Afghanistan may be dangerous parts of the equation, but they are not the head of the terrorist snake. And so that was one of those critical mistakes, as you mentioned, Grant, when we get attacked on September 11th. President Bush comes out and says, you know, we need to go after the terrorists. And he named Iran, but we didn't go after Iran. We went after Iraq and Afghanistan. We went after Osama bin Laden and eventually did get bin Laden. But bin Laden's papers revealed last week to the public show that, guess what, Iran was heavily involved in supporting him. We didn't go after Iran, and Iran's the head of the snake.
Yeah, it's almost like we found a couple of personalities despicable enough for the American people to agree to go to war against, like Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden. I don't know, maybe they didn't think there was anyone despicable enough from Iran to highlight for them, for us to go to war against them, but it does seem like we made a pretty big mistake there, even naming them, but being almost too afraid to attack or just too unwilling, too fatigued to go to war against them like we should have. And it is disappointing because obviously we did attack other nations that may have a lot of terrorism in them, and that's something we need to deal with. But if they're being funded and they're being backed and the real source is elsewhere, why are we just going after these roots and not the actual trunk of the tree?
Yeah, I always thought that, you know, if you're going to go into Iraq, that's fine, but then set it up as your military base and then go get Iran.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't do anything to stop it. What would they have done? No one was going to stop that, but we stopped it. Yeah. Or I should say, probably more accurately, God stopped it, because he has a prophetic plan that he's working out here. But we made a lot of mistakes in the way we went about those things. And who knows what maybe the military would have done, or maybe what President Bush would have done if the people would have supported it.
Right.
Because there's just so much lawlessness in America. People initially, because of the shock of September 11th, were supportive of war, going to war. But it didn't take long for the boo birds, as they call them, to come out and start protesting and waving the flags and attacking the president. And as soon as they thought there were no weapons of mass destruction, which there clearly were, and they were shipped around other places, he used them on his own people. We have footage of, everybody's seen it, where he gassed the Kurds, Saddam did. And they say, well, there's no weapons of mass destruction, you know, and we shouldn't have gone in there. Even if he didn't have weapons of mass destruction, was it okay for him to be a threatening terrorist nation destroying his own people? I mean, is that okay? So anyway, all the critics came out, and then there was no way America could move forward, even if they'd wanted to. So it's on the lawlessness of the people, and that's probably a major reason why, you know, we got stuck there in the Middle East, because of our sins.
Yeah, and what sins do is they turn people inward. They get people selfish and focused on their own lives at home, when really we have a responsibility as the world policemen. We're supposed to look beyond ourselves and see injustices in the world and correct them, because we have the power to do so, especially when they are literally causing the deaths of thousands of Americans on 9/11. Of course, that's a reason to go to war and to attack. But it's like our people now have no patience for things like that. It's almost like they would prefer the attacks come, hope that they're not killed in those attacks, and then that you just live with terrorism. Isn't that what we're seeing now? Nations more willing to live with terrorism, to coexist side by side with people who want to wipe them off the face of the earth, than to actually attack and stop the problem. I mean, again, we attacked the branches and not the trunk of the tree. We attacked the body of the snake, but not the head of the snake. So it's almost like we wanted to show maybe a display of force, but not use actual effective force. That's what happens when people are as lawless as they are, like you say. You just want to maybe look good on the surface, but not actually decisively deal with problems. Sin actually cripples your ability to deal with the problem head on.
Yeah, all these other nations really had to do, like Iran and others, was just kind of sit there and let America, you know, spin its wheels, let the public get upset, let us turn on ourselves and leave.
Yeah.
We destroy our own selves with our own infighting and our bickering, and now you can't even in this, you know, in a lot of cases you can't even talk about Islam as a root of terror because, well, that's, you know, discriminatory. While they run people over in New York City, I mean, it's baffling. But again, like you've been pointing out here, Grant, and there's a really good section in this first chapter here about where the root of terror is, and it is in Iran, and it talks about the Shah of Iran. He was a strong ally of America, but the liberal press and politicians thought he was too undemocratic. Oh boy, compared to what we have now. So they helped drive him from power. You probably remember that history, many of you. And as he was falling, America gave him little or no support. In 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini overthrew the Shah. He established Iran as the world's number one state sponsor of terrorism. It came in with a bang, taking Americans captive. We'll talk about democratic or undemocratic. That's what really got things going there in Iran. You know, we don't even it's hard to remember Iran as being not a terrorist sponsoring nation, but there was a time when they weren't. There was a time when they did a lot of great things. But since 1979 and that revolution over there, terrorism has been going crazy and coming out of Iran, and America really is at the heart of it because we allowed it to grow and in a way kind of allowed it to be in power.
Yeah, we forget that Iran didn't always used to be an Islamic republic. It was a nation that cared a lot about preserving the history of the Persian Empire, the culture of the Persian Empire. They were very receptive to Western culture and to the Western way of life. And we actually deposed the leader who was in charge of all that in favor of radical terrorists. It's unbelievable that we would actually make a decision that way.
And, you know, the thing that's so crazy is that it's not like Iran was and their terrorist regime is real subtle about it.
Right.
It's not like they're really good at tricking you. What do they do right off the bat? They take a bunch of Americans hostage, and they're constantly in the street burning the American flag and walking on it and saying, "Down with the great Satan, the U.S., and the little Satan, Israel." And the more they do that, the more we seem to say, well, maybe we could figure out a way to get along. They're not even good at disguising what they're doing. And that's the thing, too, that drives me crazy about this, and I think a lot of people, is that that's probably not a good expression. Makes me upset. That's a better way to say it. Makes me frustrated. Is, as it talks about a little further here, January 16th, 2016, we make this deal. President Obama makes this deal with Iran. Okay, now keep in mind that we know from Osama bin Laden's papers that Iran was really supporting him in a lot of ways. Okay, we just found that out as the public a few days ago. They knew that way back then.
Great point.
They knew that because they had the papers. They didn't just find them yesterday. They've had them. I'm sure they had him for a long time because they'd killed bin Laden a couple years before, right? But he still makes a nuclear deal. This is written, this King of the South and how bad this deal is was written before we knew any of that. But how much worse does it look now knowing that they knew full well that Iran was definitely involved with bin Laden?
Isn't it convenient that we get these papers from Osama bin Laden after the nuclear deal is already finalized and well underway? I mean, clearly, they covered it up this whole time. They are always trying to, the radical left is always trying to keep Americans unaware of the truth of these situations. We still haven't understood all we could about President Kennedy's assassination either because of the possible ties to communism. So it just shows you that we don't always know all the facts like we should because we have leaders who are pretty deceptive. The media has been exposed as the enemy of the American people recently. They're totally complicit in all of this. And they they're the ones who really are ruining our opportunities to win wars, because they start stirring up a lot of anger and resentment toward whatever administration is in charge at the time. It always seems to be a Republican in charge whenever these things happen. And they don't let you have any time to actually fulfill your objectives. Terrorists know that they can wait us out, like you mentioned, because our media will eventually stir up so much discontent that we have to either withdraw or drastically reduce our presence.
Yeah, it's happened over and over again. It says here in this book, King of the South, that January 16, 2016 marked the implementation of the nuclear deal with Iran. The U.S. and European Union lifted sanctions on Iran, released over $100 billion in frozen assets, and welcomed Iran into a whole rush of economic deals, and gave them a pallet of cash, by the way. And they received nothing in return. We got nothing from them. Iran has changed nothing in its policies of aggression, its subversion and sponsoring terrorism. It does nothing different. It didn't even claim that it would. And Mr. Fleury points this out. He asked this question. Will Iran cheat on these, supposedly, their, you know, their agreement with this deal or whatever? History says yes. When has it not cheated after making a significant agreement with the West? They've been caught cheating already, even since this was written. How many times? Doing all kinds of things, and then we say, well, it's not technically in the deal, or, well, you know, make excuses for it. You can't take a chance on something like this, because ultimately, the ultimate cheat is, oh, yeah, they just detonated a bomb.
Yeah, it's pretty serious, and we even had it to the point where the last administration was acknowledging that it was only a delay of them, at the most, at the best, if they obeyed the deal, it was a delay of maybe, what, 8 or 10 years before they could start producing nuclear weapons again. In other words, they're pretty much telling the people, well, it won't be our problem anymore because we'll be out of office and we will have just kicked that problem a little bit farther down the road. Really a horrible way of leading a country and dealing with threats abroad. Making a deal with a nation that supported the biggest terrorist attack on American soil ever. Why are we so quick to forgive a nation that has shown no remorse for what they have done?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and you can see more and more just in your everyday news how Iran is the king of the South, and there's a lot more proof of that here in this book, booklet, The King of the South, so make sure you get that. A lot more to talk about there, but that's where we'll have to leave it for today. Make sure you get that booklet, though, and really see what's going on there in the Middle East. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. We appreciate you being with us. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.